The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
You know what's truly amazing? The U.S. national debt is over $20 trillion and rising. Did you hear anybody mark the day when it hit $20 trillion? Remember when we used to count the number of dead in the war? Remember when people used to actually say when George Bush, when George Bush was in office, it's about to turn to $6 trillion of debt. It's $20 trillion. Now, most of the government is owned by you know, or the government, but there's $6.3 trillion in treasury bills. Those are notes and bonds that are held by foreign countries and companies. And China is the granddaddy of all of them, holding U.S. treasuries totaling $1.2 trillion. Now, that's money we don't have. It's been good for China, helping them keep their currency weaker than the dollar, which is what they want to do. It keeps their exports competitive, and it's been good for us. Consumer prices for goods remain low, and the government gets to spend more money and spend themselves until they're silly. People try to make everything sound really hard when it comes to government financing, but it isn't. It's actually really easy. If you think of the United States as a giant corporation, and countries like China that purchase our debt in the form of treasuries are like investors or banks. You know, you buy a 10-year treasury, we get that cash, but we have to pay it back with interest in 10 years. So it's really kind of like a bank. Well, yesterday, something interesting happened. The dollar, treasuries, the stock index futures all declined because there was a rumor that came out from China. And the rumor was that senior government officials in Beijing had recommended slowing or even stopping the purchases of U.S. treasuries. Now, the consequence for this for you is huge. China is our biggest investor. They're our biggest bank. So now why would they do this now? Nobody is talking about the danger in the Chinese economy, because the Chinese economy is in trouble right now. The last few years for them have been the worst in 30 years. Like the rest of the world, they never really recovered from 2008 and the financial crisis. Less people are buying their stuff, while at the same time, their labor costs are rising, because people in China are like, wait a minute, they have all this stuff. I kind of want some of that stuff. They've racked up a huge debt with underperforming loans, and nearly half a billion people live below their poverty line. Can you imagine what their poverty line is like? So if your family invests in the stock market, but then dad loses his job and starts to miss mortgage payments, does the bank call in that loan? The bank might call and say, hey, what's going on? Now, if it was like a Jimmy Stewart bank, they would say, okay, what are you doing? Come on in. Let's look at what you're doing. And if you're saving your money and you're preparing for the hard times and you're doing everything you can and you get a second job, Jimmy Stewart Bank is going to say, okay, I believe in you. We'll extend the loan. We're not going to call the mortgage. But if you're just spending like crazy, then what? They see trouble. The truth is that they have been quietly selling debt and calling in loans since 2016. Japan briefly overtook China as the largest debt holder before they began calling in loans. This leaves us with a couple of choices. The reason why they're not saying these things out loud and they're just rumors is, quite honestly, I think, to prepare you. Anybody who's smart heard this rumor, knows that in 2016, they did stop buying some of our loans. They did start liquidating some of them, which sends to us, the civilians of the world, the ones who are really going to be crushed by this, that we need to tell the government, cut the spending. But they won't. They will print money. One thing is clear, the global economy is primed for something really big. If we print money and we don't curb our spending, we are going to pour gasoline and kerosene and nitroglycerin on a very shaky bonfire.
It's Thursday, January 11th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Did we go over yesterday about the melt up on radio? I don't know if we did. We did on television
TV,
last
yeah.
night.
Yeah, you can watch that at theblaze.com/TV.
Yeah, please watch last night's episode on The Blaze. I put out some charts to show you what a melt up is, a meltdown in the stock market, you know, a giant crash. But if you look at the bubble that is coming, I think it's going to I think we are headed for a melt up, and I think we're already in it. And they last anywhere from 12 to 36 months. 3.5 years, I think, is the longest. And I think we're already in it. And I don't know when it started, but I think it started a while ago. And everybody is saying the stock market is going up. The stock market is going up, and it's going up because things are getting better. I think there's something else going on, and it's the beginning of a melt up. And if you look at any big crashes in the world, the stock market will all of a sudden just turbo up. And I don't mean like, oh, it's 20 and now it's 25. I mean, it's 25 and it's going to be 40. And a huge global catastrophe has in the past always begun just like that. That the stock market will become and will feel, society will feel about the stock market a little like they felt about Bitcoin in November, where everyone was talking about it, where everyone is saying, I got a hot stock tip. You got to get into this stock because this stock is really high. This stock is just going to take off. When everyone is behaving on the stock market like they were behaving in November about Bitcoin, that's when you need to run. But one of the predictions that I have made in for 2018 is that we are going to enter and begin to see this melt up. I believe the stock market will be at 30,000 by the end of the year. I think it's everybody says it can't go to 30,000. I think it could go to 40,000 in the next 24 months or 50,000. And then when that happens, it crashes hard and the whole world is in shambles. So that's one of the things that we've talked about. I urge you to go look at the, and they're not predictions. You know, I want to make this really clear. This is more forecasting. You know, when I talked about the caliphate and the housing crisis, I knew in my gut before I did any research. I did research to verify it. I just knew it. I could see it. And that is more of a prediction. And that's not necessarily what these are. These are me sitting down and reading a lot and studying a lot and looking at the world in a different way and saying, I think this is what's coming. So this is more forecasting. So anybody who believes in the things that I have talked about, I just want to separate that. I think it's important that you look at these things as forecasting and not as one of those, you know, caliphate things that I knew with everything in me. However, they all have a trend line that you will be able to see, and that is what I do know. So yesterday, Foreign Affairs, because we've posted these at glennbeck.com, and yesterday we posted Foreign Affairs and went over them, and we asked you to vote which ones do you think are most likely to happen and least likely to happen. And in Foreign Affairs, Turkey will continue to turn towards religious fascism and will continue to make hard terms towards Sharia law. That got 20% of the listeners saying, yeah, they thought that was going to happen. Cultural clashes between immigrants and natives will cause backlash from the public across Western Europe. That will continue, 19%. Persecution of Christians, homosexuals, non-Muslim or religious minorities, and those Muslims not deemed Muslim enough will reach new lows for humanity in the Middle East. I see a massive, massive problem coming beyond anything that we have seen yet. Another socialist country will see its currency collapse. The least likely is the one I think is most likely to happen, strangely. China will land a rover on the dark side of the moon, and it has serious consequences for us militarily. And I will be shocked if that doesn't happen by the end of the year. But we'll see. You want to start with today's, Stu?
Yeah, we can do that.
Where do you want to start? Because this is tech and AI, and there's a lot of these. I have been studying for really hard for about 8 months, and reading as much as I could on technology and futurist stuff, and I've been doing that because the world is about to profoundly change in the next 10 years. And 10 years from now, you will not recognize it. And I know I've said that before. You won't recognize the world. And I've been right on that. And when I said that in 2007, there's going to come a time soon where you're going to wake up and you will not recognize your country.
I mean, think of what's happened since then. The smartphone. Yeah. Right? Since 2007, I think that's the year the iPhone came out. Think of how much your life has changed.
Just from that. But I meant that you're not going to be able to see it with its values, and you won't recognize your country. And everything will be upside down. Everything that you thought you could trust, you're not going to be able to trust. All of that, I believe, has happened. I feel as strongly about that as I do about saying this. In 10 years, you will not recognize your life anymore. Everything is about to change. So go into it with that understanding. Where do you want to start on these?
How about this one? Because I think this is definitely possible, but I'm curious as to why you think it's going to happen this year. An AI-generated image or audio file will be used to hoax the public.
So I don't think we're going to find out about this one. I think I put this in here because I think we are so close to this that it is possible that this comes out because of the midterm election. If it's not going to happen here, it will happen by 2020. We are so in the highest levels, you can hoax almost anything now. You can make anyone look like they're doing something they shouldn't be doing at the very highest levels. And it's real. And once this is just a little farther ahead, you'll be able to destroy your adversary by releasing an audio tape or a video of them doing or saying something that they swore they would never do. And by the time you figure out about it, the damage will be done.
Like a sex tape or corruption. Like, for example,
Let's say this. I do not believe the Russian thing on Donald Trump and the Golden Shower thing. Do not believe it. For this one reason alone, he's too much of a germaphobe.
That is true.
Seriously.
Yeah.
He's too much of a germaphobe. He would not do that. But if they released a tape and it was Donald Trump, you would say, oh, my gosh.
I guess he did do it.
And it would never, that imprint would never go away. Even if you found out later, 6 months later, that was totally bogus. We're entering a time, because one of the others is the general population will begin to realize that you can no longer trust what you hear, see, taste, or touch as a test of something being authentic.
I mean, that's how do you judge life at that point?
Okay, well, remember, we changed in the Dark Ages. This is why this is so important. The word nonsense was a public uprising. Okay, that came from the churches saying, I know, God tells me, and so you have to do those things. Well, the people rose up eventually, and they were like, you know what? I'm not. No. No, the king is just born and he says, I know, and the church backs him up? No. So the word nonsense was, don't believe nonsense. Don't believe the things that you can't see, hear, touch, smell, or taste. Don't believe it. That's nonsense. We're about to go into a place to where you're going to have to say, nonsense is the only thing that I can trust. we have to, the most important things that you can teach your children right now, one, teach your children to think out of the box. I am this close to saying publicly and in my own life, my kids will never go to college. I do not want them going to college. And I reason why is because they will be taught what to think. They will go into a box, and the world is not in that box anymore. So the most important thing you can teach your kids is how to find information and to stay nimble mentally. Don't get locked down into anything, because life is going to change so many times so fast in their life. They have to be nimble. Education, the way education is being done right now, will not help them. It will harm them, deeply harm them in the future, I believe. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you can teach your kids is, how do I know that that's true? How do I not just how can I search for the truth, but what do I feel about that? Are there gifts? Are there tools that you have internally that can help you cipher the truth? A way for you to be able to go, that's not right. There's something wrong there. Those two skills will put your children way ahead. Everything else will be secondary to those two skills. Mm. More on the rest of the high tech coming up in just a second.
So you can go to glenbeck.com right now and see the predictions, all of them, for technology that we're going to go through, some of them here today, as well as you can look at the predictions for foreign affairs, for politics, and then tomorrow there's a kind of a cryptocurrency one that goes out. You can get that early if you sign up for the newsletter at glenbeck.com.
Glenn Beck.
There's so many of these forecasts here for 2018 that I've made on technology that I want you to go to glenbeck.com. I'm going to race through a couple of them here. Cord cutting will continue to pick up pace as Amazon and others begin to serve linear needs. So in other words, Amazon, you're going to start settling down on Amazon or Netflix, and they're going to start introducing like linear channels. And you're going to be able to be basically a cable company yourself. You're going to say, I want Glenn Beck and I want Ben Shapiro and I want CRTV. And there'll be called skinny bundles, and they'll start. You'll be your own cable company. That's about to happen. Personal assistants such as Alexa, Siri, and Google Home are going to begin to penetrate the market. Our creepiness is going to go away, and we're going to start to like those things.
I would say that one's already happening, but you're saying to a bigger level,
and you'll see why later. Battery performance could double in this year, and quantum computers, for the first time, will compute something that could not be done by traditional computers.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Try to do a forecast of the things that I think are going to happen. Some of them are fun. Some of them, not so much fun. Things that you need to be aware of. I have no idea. There's 40 of them, and they cover all topics. And, next year at this time, we'll be going through them and probably making fun of a lot.
Oh, I'll definitely be mocking you for every one you get wrong and ignoring all the ones you get right.
Yes, of course.
There's no problem with that. Let's go through some of these.
These are tech. Today is tech.
Yeah, technology. And this is an interesting thing because you've been reading so many tech books, really dozens. Over the past like 6 months.
Yeah.
And I don't want to read all of those. So feel like is like you've read them all, and then like you can crystallize what you think all of these things are kind of coming together on.
Yes.
And that's what this list is. You can see it at glenbeck.com and vote for the ones you think that will come true in the next year. Consumer AI. artificial intelligence that attempts to gauge our emotions will be introduced.
It just happened yesterday at CES. It just happened.
Really?
There is a story. We'll have to find it, and maybe we can show some pictures on, of it on TV tonight. There is a story about a ping pong playing robot at CES. And it's not about the fact that it can play ping pong with you. It has cameras up above the table, all directed at you. And it's evaluating your emotions.
Your emotions?
Your emotions. Are you frustrated? Are you confident? How are you playing? And it's trying to engage and see your emotions. And the reason why this is important, this is not just a fun thing, is this is to do a couple of things. And in fact, let me look here. Deep learning robots. Can we come back to the emotion thing
for
a second?
Yeah.
Okay, because there's three of these that are kind of tied together.
Yeah.
Deep learning robots will become more important in medicine. When I found this out, I couldn't believe it. There is a, you know what Big Blue is? IBM's Big Blue?
Yeah. Is that the chess playing
yes.
computer? Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the chess playing thing is called narrow AI. It's not thinking. It's you've just put in every possible chess move into Big Blue. And so it's just looking at all of the chess moves that have ever been done and how they went. And then it sees Gary move a piece and it's like, okay, he's probably going to go do this. So I'm going to do this chess move. Okay. That's called narrow AI. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that Big Blue can do is play chess. There's another one. I don't remember what it's called. IBM then put a Jeopardy computer on and it gave it all the information. And all it's doing is looking at all of that information and trying to get to the answer faster than the human, okay? Still narrow AI. There's narrow AI that, I can't remember the name of the hospital now. Shoot, it's not Columbia. It's up in New York.
General Hospital?
Yes, General Hospital, right?
Yeah,
with Luke
a
and Laura.
A lot of drama there.
Right,
I mean, guys,
crazy.
Do some freaking medical stuff.
Right, so I think it's Sloan Kettering that is doing this. They got together with IBM and they said, IBM said, you know what? I wonder if we could do this for cancer. I wonder if we could put all of the cancer results that we've ever had, all the diagnoses, all the treatments, from all of the records of anybody who has come into Sloan Kettering and said, I think I have cancer. Put all of that information in and let's see if the computer can diagnose cancer better than humans. The best Sloan Kettering doctors, I mean, the best cancer doctors are about 50 to 55% on catching cancer early. Big Blue, or this IBM computer that is the narrow AI on cancer, is now in the 90s. Okay?
Mm.
So you think that you want a doctor that is a human. This is only doing Sloan Kettering. There is another company that has just come out, and I'll give you the name maybe tomorrow or something, because I just don't have it off the top of my head, that saw this and went, well, this is stupid. Why are they just doing it with Sloan Kettering? Let's gather all cancer stuff. Let's gather every single case from around the world. Let's put the NIH in it. Let's put everything from the United States in it. Because the more information it has, the more accurate it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so they're starting to gather all of this data. Who's going to go to a doctor? Who's going to go to a human when you have a 40%, you have a 40% better chance of getting your cancer diagnosed than you do with a human?
Right. You want the best outcome possible.
Yeah. Have you run this through the computer? Yeah. I want to know. Do you run this through the computer? So now computers are going to, that's the first step. They're going to start diagnosing and start doing surgery. So they're going to play a bigger role in medicine with deep learning robots. The next thing is nurses and doctors. Imagine you're sitting with an AI and they have to tell you you have cancer, okay? And you're really upset. If it's just a cold, you have cancer. You've got 3 months.
You have cancer.
Right. It won't. Nobody will want it. There's a huge shortage of nurses already in America. By 2020, I can't remember the number. It's an astounding number of nurses that we're going to be short of. Already, I think it's 40% of all nurses come from the Philippines, coming in from the United States. We're not producing nurses, and we're going to need a lot more nurses than we have now, but definitely in 5 and 10 years from now as the population gets older. So what do we do? So they're looking into the possibility of AI nursing, but that's where emotions are critical. So the ping pong playing tennis guy, it's just not a game. They're introducing it as a game, but what that is they need to be able to make computers recognize your emotion and then reflect that emotion in appropriate ways. Because in 10 years from now, you go someplace to check in to a hotel or whatever, an average hotel, not a really nice one because they probably will have people. It's just going to be a computer there, and it's going to relate to you. It'll be AI. And it needs to be able to relate to people emotionally so they can reflect whatever the you're in a restaurant and you're being served by AI and it's your anniversary. It needs to be able to pick up on that and reflect it. And, you know, you're really mad because you had a bad meal. It needs to understand that.
That's a creepy world, though. There's a lot of creepiness in that until we get used to it.
So it's a creepy world because of this. Right now, we are teaching it how we feel, and then we're teaching it how to fake those feelings. We know right now it can't feel, so it can't genuinely reflect those feelings back. It doesn't have genuine compassion. We're teaching it how to fake compassion. So my problem with this is, for the future, when we do have ASI, artificial super intelligence, which will claim to be alive, I don't want to have spent 10, 15, 20 years teaching it how to lie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How to recognize what we're feeling and then be able to play off of those feelings.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because a lot of times we talk about these topics and they're positioned in the negative. And there's a lot of creepiness kind of surrounding what you're talking about, but you're also talking about massive improvements in healthcare, massive improvements in diagnosing your disease, in treating your diseases. I mean, we could wind up, you know, doubling and tripling our lifetimes.
So let me give you this one. This is way out on a limb, but two major illnesses will be cured by new advances in medicine. This year. This is way out. Mm-hmm. I think this has a very low chance of happening, but it could through gene splicing. We're now starting to go in and gene splice and we're making real progress on things like hemophilia and sickle cell anemia. Those could go away soon. And it's because of the deep learning robots, the deep learning artificial intelligence, things like gene splicing. We're entering territory that I think we will cure cancer. I don't know, in the next 10 years, maybe.
Wow.
And when we start to have artificial general intelligence, a step down from the spooky intelligence, when we have artificial general intelligence, when we have deep learning robots that have all of the information on cancer, all of a sudden that's going to turbo. When you feed every bit of information into that computer, if it's already twice as good at diagnosis today, when we feed all of the information in cancer, it's going to be able to look at you way in advance and go, cancer, get it.
And I think those outcomes are going to be so positive that the downsides of losing our privacy and giving up all of our information and all of those things are going to seem so inconsequential. And in reality, those are going to be big debates that are important.
I will tell you that, you know, I kind of want to go into, if we have time, you heard my theory yesterday of one of the questions that I asked about, you know, we were talking about, you know, the future. And I talked about bionic arms. we have questions that have to be answered today, because in 5 years from now, you're going to be asked ethical questions that you won't know how to answer. I'll give you based on the Bionic Man, better, stronger, faster. I'll give that to you when we come back.
Glenn Beck.
Okay. We're live on Facebook now because we had to ask the Facebook audience. We are so, we're both a little high on NyQuil today.
Yes, I'm heavily drugged.
Yeah.
Right now.
So I'm not good at this anyway, but I cannot remember what we, because I think I said right before we went into the break, and I'll tell you about that when we come back, but Stu has absolutely no idea of what we were talking about because he's hepped up on NyQuil. Sarah, do you know?
Global warming?
No, it wasn't global warming. It was something to do with
hamsters.
It
wasn't hamsters?
No.
I will say
they're not helpful now.
They're just suggesting strange things. Oh, bionic arms.
Bionic arms. That's okay. What it was. Thank you.
Thank you.
So bionic arms.
David.
So think about this. Right now, we look at losing an arm or a limb. That's a really bad thing. Okay. And it's a bad thing mainly because they don't work as well. Okay, it's, you know, you're strapping something on. It doesn't work. But imagine if you could be the $6 million man. Do you remember the Lee Majors show with $6 million man? Better, stronger, faster. It looked like an arm. Nobody knew that it wasn't. His legs worked. He could run super fast. All of that. We're entering that time. Okay. Now we're also entering a time to where you can say, you know what, I'm a woman. Cut it off. And we do.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you say, and I'm just making this up, I'm a sculptor and my arms and my hands are not strong enough for me to really sculpt the way I want to sculpt. Doctor, cut my arms off. I want these arms because these arms have been designed by me and a team to be the best for sculpting.
And you can essentially 3D print whatever sculpture you want.
No, you 3D print your arms.
Well, yeah, but the arms will essentially do the work of a 3D printer on a sculpture, right?
Like, yes.
They'll just design the perfect thing.
Right. You'll be able to still think and use, but they will be better, stronger, faster. You want to, and the reason why I'm thinking this way is because there's a guy who was in a mountain climbing accident. He lived to mountain climb. He said he'd never walk again. He lost his legs. So he decided to take his time instead of feeling sorry for himself. He went to MIT. He designed new legs. Okay. Hmm. And the new legs, he designed feet that are really super small. So when he's on the mountain, they can fit into little teeny crevices. He's now a better mountain climber than anybody else. And he's like, this is great. Okay. Well, let's play this out. What's going to stop people from saying, because we're already saying I'm a woman, cut it off. What's going to stop people from saying I have a right to cut off my limbs and replace them with this? Is that right? Is that wrong? Should you? Should you not? Those are the kinds of easy questions coming our way.